B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Look, Motley made the announcement. They made this huge deal, you know, this WWE-style publicity stunt of signing this phony contract that says they couldn't tour.
That right there is the sound of Don Jameson from that metal show talking about Motley Crue. We'll get more into that with the rock news with Al Beck. But first up, it's Gary Ho-Ho-Hoey. Of course, it's his time of year. His tour is about to fire up. We talk about the past year with his blues album. And, of course, I had to talk about Lita Ford. It's like he's been working on his Lita Ford record for a long time.
But Lita, she's in the best place she's ever been, man. You know what I mean? Coming off of all this touring and getting her life back where she wants it.
He talks quite a bit about this new Lita Ford record and kind of dives deep into it. He tells us what he has coming up for 2020, as well as possibly a live recording. And also a guitar player he said this about.
And I just remember when he was a younger kid coming at some of these guitar shows and just blowing everyone's mind, you know. And I just thought, wow, this guy's going somewhere.
Gary Hoey is up first on the Talkin' Rock podcast. Then we talk to Mr. Yacht Rock himself. What does Michael McDonald think of the term yacht rock?
You know, the way I look at it is you're either yacht or you're not.
I have to admit that this was a really fun conversation. He talks about the Doobie Brothers 50th anniversary tour, about Steely Dan. We talk about commercials he's been in, as well as their hopes to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
But, you know, even if for whatever reason we don't make it and we're still just eligible, as Pat said, you know, we may just still be eligible after it's all said and done. But at our age, to be eligible for anything is a good thing.
Even if you're not a fan of the Doobie Brothers or Yacht Rock, it's definitely worth a listen. It's Gary Hoey and Michael McDonald today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Yes, once again, we've got two for the price of one coming up today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Gary Hoey's up first. You a big Gary Hoey fan, are you?
I do like Gary Hoey.
Yeah, can you play some of his riffs? I saw on Twitter or something the other day you were playing a riff. What was that riff?
It was Jesus Saves from Slayer.
Okay, there you go. The perfect holiday song. Yeah. Actually, one of my grandmother's favorites.
Yeah, so. I know. I was talking to somebody. They asked me about my favorite band, and I was, you know, Slayer, and they are not. This is somebody who would like Beyonce or Ed Sheeran, yeah. And I'm trying to. They're like, well, what are some of their songs? I start listing off things like Raining Blood, Spill the Blood, Disciple. I'm like, oh, my God, this so morbid.
Well, listen, if you like Slayer, the last Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast featured Dave Lombardo, as well as Todd Evans, just simply known as Todd, from Mobile Death Camp, but he was in Gwar. If you had a chance to listen to that,
Gwar.
He's got some great stories.
Yeah.
If you get a chance. And that's just the first time he's going to be on, because he has so many stories. I'm like, you've got to come back.
Yeah.
So think about this. Todd is 6'5", 360 pounds. Okay? He is a mountain of a man.
Jesus.
And just a really good guy, super talented guitar player too. Mobile Death Camp, a great band. But anyways, we got off a little bit off what's going on here. So we're going to talk to Gary coming up in just a second. Also, Michael McDonald, who's been in tons of stuff, and at one point, like, he was the backup singer for every band from Christopher Cross back in the day. Steely Dan did a lot of their records, of course. Joined the Doobie Brothers in the mid '70s, and now for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they got the Doobie Brothers 50th anniversary tour coming up. We talk a lot about that, and you know, pretty much the king of yacht rock.
Sure.
So and then we got rock news. We're gonna have a special guest along with Al Beck. Don Jameson from that metal show is gonna join us, because he kind of made some news recently with his clip about Mick Mars talking about free tickets for everybody for this Motley Crue tour. So
right.
I don't know how they're gonna pay the band, but we'll talk more about that.
I think they'll figure it out.
Also, another band that's reuniting, there was some, I guess, some photoshopped tour dates coming up. We'll tell you about that.
Internet trolls.
That's right. David Lee Roth and his latest, I don't know, I can't say accusation, his latest... Yeah.
Who he's become an internet troll.
Right, yeah. So we'll talk about that. And also a documentary that Dave Grohl kind of helped a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyways, we'll talk all about that with Al Beck and Don Jameson, good old DJ from the metal show, coming up here in just a bit. In the meantime, Gary Hoey, always great to talk with, especially this time of year. He's really firing up that Christmas machine. And he's up first today on Talkin' Rock right here on the podcast. Hope you guys enjoy this. Hey, Gary, how's things, man? Great to hear your voice again.
Things are good, man. It's good to hear you as well, and I hope everything's good. We're excited to be coming to town, and it's that time of year, my friend.
Yeah, no doubt. You got your holiday Christmas hat on. And, you know, the first thing I wanted to ask you about, and I ask you about this every year, but new Christmas music, new album, what's going on with that? Anything?
We, you know what? We have a new blues album, Neon Highway Blues.
Right.
We do not have a new Christmas album, but we do have some new Christmas music we've been recording. It's funny. We're talking to the label right now about when to put it out, and next year is our 25th anniversary. So I think they might be holding it till then, but we do have some new Christmas music, and you know the coolest thing is, man, we recorded 40 Christmas songs at this point, and we can't even do everything I recorded even now when we play live. What I love is, you know, we have so much of a tradition in the set with the 12 days of Christmas and, you know, the Grinch and Santa Claus coming to town and Carol of the Bells, and so it's kind of like a, I don't know, it's not, I don't want to say if it's not broke, we're not fixing it, but even if we record new Christmas music, they still want to hear the same 10.
Right. Yeah. No, I got you. Yeah, and it's kind of, it's funny because since you did your first Christmas records almost 25 years ago now, there's been some Christmas classics that have come out as far as movies are concerned, like the Polar Express and different things like that, that you might be able to incorporate down the road with some of those songs.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, you know, my version of Deck the Halls, which is, you know, a pretty heavy version of the song.
Which appeared in that movie, right? Yeah, appeared in the movie, right. Great movie, yeah.
It got in the movie, which was great. And, you know, and it's just, we got in the Hallmark cards, which you and I have talked about before. You know, we had some of the music in the Hallmarks. When you open it up, it's playing. I mean, that to me, I mean, I had to pinch myself literally and say, dude, you created Christmas music that is like, you know, stood the test of 20 years, and now they're thinking of it, you know, people are carving the turkey or whatever, or decorating the tree to your arrangements. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing to me.
No, that's cool. Well, congratulations, man. It has been a long journey up until this year, now with 25 years coming down the road. Hey, real fast, you just mentioned your blues album, Neon Highway Blues. So how was the touring over the summer? How'd the fans take that record? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was great, man. This year was incredible. I don't know about for you, but for me, it kind of flew by because we were very busy with Neon Highway. We did a lot of live shows, and the fans were great. I mean, the album got a great response, and you know, just adding the songs to the set, people were really into it, and I couldn't be happier, man. You know, and I've got a lot of new music now. We're recording, and we're going to put out. I think we're going to put out a double album next year. We might even do a double live album. Which we haven't done in a long time, you know, just to get something live out, and a lot of new studio music as well. So it's cool, man. We're just going to keep on that road, and I'm enjoying it.
Now you say studio music. So how much studio stuff do you do per year? Do you do stuff for other artists?
Yeah, man, I'm always doing stuff. I mean, I just, you know, I'm always working with Lita Ford.
Right.
We're still recording. She just left. We just did some more songs. I just did a bunch of tracks for ESPN Sports just about a month ago. We just did a bunch of songs with them. And then I'm always writing with, you know, other people. Or I'm writing or recording for something or producing a young artist or somebody that nobody knows yet that I'm trying to help, you know, to get where they're going, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, you just mentioned the Lita Ford thing, and that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about. So she's kind of been talking about the record. I know it seems like I've been talking to you about the record for like the last 10 years, but is it almost finished? I mean, what's going on with it?
Yeah, it is. She's funny. You know, she's doing a big tour with Alice Cooper in the new year. They're going out and doing a lot of dates, and she just said they're adding a bunch more dates. So she's, you know, she's got a pretty big tour, you know, and she really wants this record behind it. And you know how life is, man. I mean, she went from, we've been recording this music over the last several years, and she put out, you know, I guess a live record, and then she put out a bonus tracks, never found before, hidden tracks and stuff. So she's been putting stuff out, But she hasn't, I think, you know, for her to land the right record deal, you know what I mean, and get the right marketing behind the record is what she's really waiting for. And I think now things are really in place. And I got to be honest with you, they say in life, timing is everything. And for Lita, she's in the best place she's ever been, man. You know what I mean? Coming off of all this touring and getting her life back where she wants it. I mean, if you read her book, it's you know, it's all out there. But she is in the best place she's ever been. So I just talked to her the other day, and, you know, so I think it's like right now ready to go, literally.
So everything is finished with that record, because I'm kind of getting mixed signals from you. You're saying they're still recording stuff, but is everything done, or?
Well, we have enough songs right now to put out a record.
Okay.
But she, you know, she'll come and we'll just record new songs. Like when she gets new songs, she just wants to come and record them. So we record them. And then when we sit down with the record company, which I know she's shopping now, you know, then it's like, okay, let's put all the songs on the table and see which ones, you know, really fit for this record. And this record has a real concept kind of thing to it. It all sort of fits together, you know, and it's a deep album, man. I mean, I cannot wait for people to hear it. I'm going crazy. I'm ready to put the demos out and not even tell her, you know.
What do you mean by deep? I kind of heard it might be a little bit darker.
Well, it's dark in some ways, but it's dark in some ways, but it's got a big production to it, and it's just really badass, man. It's just so great, and you know, it's dark in the way that Lita does dark, in the way that Ozzy and Alice Cooper does dark. It's they own it, and they've lived it. And they've, you know, been on the edge of death, probably every one of them. And it's just like, you know, they pour it into their music. And when she does stuff that scares me or shocks me, I always just go, and why wouldn't she? You know, and when record companies and her manager calls me and says, Lita needs to write a poppy song. We need something with a nice melody. And I go, dude. That she is not, you know, Belinda Carlisle. That's Lita Ford, you know. Don't tell her what to do. This is who she is. And you know what I mean? And so to me, I love artists like that just own who they are and what they are. And if you embrace that more with them, you bring out the best.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, like, I've met Lita. I met her actually in person once, and she could not have been nicer. And I've interviewed her a few times, yeah. And every time I interview her, she's very open and she's very candid and she's always super nice. And I can't say enough good things about her. And I know you speak very highly of her every time I talk to you about it.
Well, anyone that ever meets her, you know, you just, she stops dead, she looks you right in the eye, and you know you have her attention. And that's just, you know, rare these days in this music business. And Lita gives everyone her undivided attention and her love and her passion. And she, you know, like you said, when you talk to her, you just feel it over the phone. She just called in for a food drive I was doing at another station in my town, you know, for the holiday food drive.
Yeah.
And she called in. It was 6 a.m. in Arizona. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she's not calling in. And we're waiting. And they're playing Kiss Me Deadly in the background. And she ain't calling. And I'm texting her. And my wife's calling her home phone. And the dog's licking her face. And she ain't getting up. And so we intro her. We go back to commercial. We're coming back. And then 20 minutes later, you know, she finally calls in. And everyone's like calling me, and her manager's texting me, my phone's vibrating. And I just said, man, this is even more rock and roll. This is better than if she was right on time. This is like, this made it 10 times better, you know?
Yeah.
And when she called, she was a charm, you know? She was awesome.
Now, yeah, she's great.
Who doesn't want to hear Lita Ford when she rolls out of bed?
Well, exactly.
All right? Who doesn't want to hear what that voice sounds like right when she's just cracking dawn?
I'll leave that comment alone.
Someone's dawn.
Hey, so you, of course, you got the holiday tour and stuff coming up. I know that you always have a lot of stuff that's happening between, like, rock and roll fantasy camps and some cruises and whatnot. What do you got coming up for 2020?
2020 is looking good. You know, we're excited because we're going to start off right with the year. I'm going to hit the NAMM convention in Anaheim with all the musicians and instruments and stuff. And then we're going to be doing a rock fantasy camp with REO Speedwagon and some other artists that are at that. And then we're going to be heading out on the rock cruise in February again with Roger Daltrey and Buddy Guy and a lot of great artists. And then we're starting to plan a lot of touring next year, just continue touring and then get a new record out, you know, hopefully.
Yeah. And that's sort of the live one you were talking about, right?
Yes. Yeah. We were talking about doing a live double album and doing a double vinyl. And I haven't put out a live record in a very long time. So I think it would be cool.
That's awesome. You know, I was interviewing Joe Bonamassa the other day, and I name dropped you. And yeah, he had a lot of nice things to say. What do you think about a player like that?
Oh, man, I love Joe a lot and, you know, kind of watched him grow up, you know, because he's a lot younger than me. And I just remember when he was a younger kid coming at some of these guitar shows and just blowing everyone's mind, you know. And I just thought, wow, this guy's going somewhere. And I remember meeting him and his dad in an elevator, and they were so cool. And we talked and, you know, and years later, here I am playing with him at the Wang in Boston, and he's selling out theaters everywhere. So, you know what? He has carried the torch of the blues for so long. And he's a phenomenal player, man. You know, he's just phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Gary, I know that my time's running short here, but I just want to thank you for the time. You'll be coming through the Motor City on lucky December Friday the 13th, right down the street from the radio station. So we need to get up and maybe grab a bite or something beforehand. So
we do, man. I would love to see you. The Magic Bag. We haven't been back to the bag in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, and I won't have a motorcycle night or anything else going on that night.
Right, good. None of that stuff. We can have some eggnog. We'll have a great time.
And there he is, Gary Ho-Ho-Hoey, up first today on the Talkin' Rock and Meltdown podcast. Just another one of these guitar players that makes it look so simple. It's like, just, I mean, it's so easy for him to go up there on stage and just, you know, just jam songs and just rip up there on his guitar. So get a chance to check him out on his Ho-Ho-Hoey holiday tour, which he does every single year. Like you said, closing in 25 years, if you believe that. Hey, up next, it's Michael McDonald. Kind of funny how this interview came about. I'm on this email with, you know, different publicists here and there, and they're always looking to interview different guests. And so they email me, and they're like, hey, we have Tom Johnson from the Doobie Brothers. Would you like to interview him? And the time they gave me just wouldn't work. So I said, listen, I can't make this one work. And so they emailed me back. They're like, well, look, how about if we get you Michael McDonald at a time that does work for you? And I'm like, okay, great. That sounds awesome. Yeah, the Doobie Brothers are really not really in my wheelhouse. I like them. I can respect what they've done. I mean, they seem like really good guys. They're super talented as well. But Michael McDonald's done so many things between his solo career as well as, you know, Steely Dan backing vocals, which we talk about in the interview. He just has such a great storied history. And many, many years ago, I was at this thing that I used to do out at the Grammys in Los Angeles, where like that weekend of the Grammys, they would bring in all these different musical acts and like D-list celebrities from old TV shows and different things where you'd interview them. And I never forgot what this one guy said. He said, hey, listen, interview some of these artists who you might not play or might not know that much about because you never know what's going to happen. And that's kind of the approach I take here on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Because, you know, the last podcast I did, like we were just talking about at the beginning of the show, was with Dave Lombardo, formerly Slayer, and Todd from Mobile Death Camp and formerly from Gwar. And now I'm talking to Michael McDonald from the Doobie Brothers. But it's a great interview. He's super funny. And, I mean, he's got a great voice and just a super story. History as well. So I hope you guys dig this. Don Jameson and rock news coming up after Michael McDonald here on Talkin' Rock. Hey, Michael, how's things, man? Doing a big junket of interview press today, eh?
Yeah. Good to talk to you, Meltdown. I love the name.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah. I've been here in Detroit for 24 years. And I was going to say Motown's played a big influence in your life, hasn't it?
It sure has. Everybody in America, pretty much. You know, but,
yeah.
Me no less, yeah.
Yeah, have you ever been to the Motown Museum in Hittsville, USA?
I have, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was going to say, when you're coming through the Motor City next year, if you haven't seen that yet, you should check that out. But hey, tell us about this 50th anniversary tour. How long you been planning this thing? And don't say 50 years. I
mean, yeah, well, inadvertently, yeah, 50 years. Yeah, it's... It's going to be terribly exciting, you know. I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. The chance to kind of actually, you know, sit deep in my seat with the band for a few months, you know, is something I've kind of been looking forward to over the years. And I've played with them, you know, over the years in recent years. And it's always fun to get back together with the guys. It's always a great hang and catch up. And, you know, Pat and I have been neighbors over in Hawaii for the last few years, so I see him pretty often, and you know, I've stayed in touch with all the guys, Tommy and John and Skunk and people over the years, but I'm looking forward to, you know, actually having that experience of playing the show for a while, you know, because even with my band, I find that, you know, we go out and we tour, and about the last three shows, we actually feel like we're actually starting to get it on a level that we hadn't gotten it up till now, you know. So, you know, that just goes with the territory. Hopefully the audience never notices that, but I look forward to having that experience with the band, you know.
Yeah, to really immerse yourself in it. So now you've played a couple shows this past week, one of them with the Doobie Brothers and one of them with this The Last Waltz with the band, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah, so how'd those gigs go?
Great. You know, it's always a thrill for me to play Taking It to the Streets with the Doobies. You
right.
know, it's unique to that, you know, to that experience for me, because I've played it for years, and with my band, and we play it every night, and the audience is always great when we play it, and we kind of feed off their enthusiasm, and I love the arrangement we do, but there's something about getting up there with the Doobies and playing it that it has a whole different energy, and it's exciting for me to play it with those guys.
Yeah, now, did the fans know that you were there the other night? Because you just came out and did the encore, right?
I don't think they knew that I was going to be there. No, we didn't announce it or anything, and but, you know, from the first downbeat of their show, Nashville just, you know, really, I felt really rose to the occasion. They just really raised the roof for those guys. It just seemed like the excitement was really palpable. You know, I've played the Ryman many times, and I've almost never seen that level of excitement there. You know, Nashville really, really loves the Doobies, you know.
Yeah, now you're living there too, aren't you? Or you've been living there?
I am. I lived here full-time for about 15 years, and then I'm splitting my time these days between the West Coast and Nashville. But Nashville's still home for me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't believe, I mean, well, you know, I mean, I talk to so many rockers, and even in the metal world that live in Nashville now, it's like everyone seems to be moving there.
Yeah, Nashville has become kind of the epicenter for rock and roll, which who would have ever thought? But you know, and I say that, and yet Nashville has always been a rock and roll town. As much as it's been, there's been great jazz records made here. But, you know, for the most part, a lot of the more pop records and rock, early rock records, so many of them, a lot of Elvis's recordings were here in Nashville, the Everly Brothers. You know, I remember a great record I loved growing up by the Nashville Teens, you know, it's Tobacco Road. But a lot of Joe Tex recorded much of his early R&B stuff here. And so Nashville's always been a pretty eclectic musical destination. You know?
Yeah. So now you're up for you're nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I guess you guys are third in voting right now. What does the strong like fan support mean to you after, you know, being long snubbed by the Rock Hall?
Well, you know, I it's remarkable, you know, that we're still eligible for you know, that we are eligible for that. I think the band deserves that, you know, for a large part of their history was before I even joined them, you know, and they literally started with their first hit record in the 70s, you know, with listening to the music, and went on from there, you know. So, I mean, I remember when I joined the band, my friend Keith, who's I stayed at his house when we started rehearsals, and I was, you know, impressed with the amount of platinum records on his wall and in just the time since he had been with the band, you know. So you know, the band has a varied but a long history, and it's great to see, you know, Tom and Pat especially get this honor, and all the guys who started out, the original guys, you know, are really responsible for the iconic history of the band, you know, and it's just great to see it happen. But, you know, even if for whatever reason we don't make it and we're still just eligible, as Pat said, you know, we may just still be eligible after it's all said and done. But at our age, to be eligible for anything is a good thing.
So outside of the Doobie Brothers, if you had to pick like the other five to go in with you, who would you pick off that list that's eligible now?
Oh, gosh, you got me there. I'm not sure. I mean, was it Pat Benatar was one?
Right. And, yeah, Judas Priest. And I mean, there's just, Priest. A bunch of them. Yeah. So I thought that maybe you had them all bands. Memorized. So.
No, yeah, sorry. There's very little that I have memorized anymore. But, yeah, you know, they're all great bands. And I think, you know, for as much as people, you know, a lot of our friends are always going, hey, why aren't you guys in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? You know, there are just so many people that deserve that honor that are part of music history in the U.S. And especially during our period coming up in the 60s and 70s, you know, I'm sure there's bands that still deserve to be in there that, you know, so we're just honored to even be considered, you know.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, too, I just love those Steely Dan records that you're on, too. I mean, I just love them. I can't tell you how many times. Listen, I'm on a rock station. I was known at one point for Mandatory Metallica, but I just love that Steely Dan stuff. You know.
Yeah, me too. I mean, and what a unique band, you know, of all the bands, you know, in the 70s. That was the one thing about the 70s that I feel most fortunate having come up in that time was how eclectic all the bands were. You know, bands got away with doing all kinds of different genres of music on one record, you know. And I miss that to some degree. Still, there are so many genres now, and with you know, satellite radio and stuff, you can kind of tune into whatever genre you want. But back then, everybody seemed to want to cover different styles of music, and I think so many people did it well. You know, James Taylor, Steely Dan, the Doobies for sure. The Doobies, that was kind of they kind of epitomized that to me. When I joined them, I was amazed at how diverse their songbook was. You know.
Yeah, no, I was listening to Katie Lye just today. It's so good. What do you think of the term yacht rock? Someone asked you that before?
Yeah, no, all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the way I look at it is you're either yacht or you're not.
That's a great answer. Yeah, I never thought about that. So, you know, I remember, you know, in the early 2000s and stuff, I saw you on like those long distance TV commercials and stuff. What are some of your favorite commercials you've been involved in?
Well, one would have to be the MCI commercial that was pretty much responsible for the success of the Motown record. You know, when we landed that account, and it was a friend of mine who worked at the ad agency, and she, you know, she was a fan of the band, of the Doobies for years, and a fan of my solo stuff, and so when we got, you know, that. The shot at actually being on film performing Ain't No Mountain, the Ashford Simpson song, great Ashford Simpson song, wound up being probably the best video we could have ever done because it was played like clockwork all day long, and they were nice enough to put the Chyron on the commercial from the Motown album, you know. So, you know, the record, you know, just zoomed in sales right at that point, you know, and probably did better than any of us expected it to do, thanks to the MCI exposure, you know.
Now, when I told my people on social media, my followers and whatnot, that I was going to talk to you, of course, I got a bunch of questions. But people wanted to know what you thought of the scene in 40-Year-Old Virgin and the Saturday Night Live skits back in the day.
They were great. You know, SCTV had a great skit. But, you know... It's a great form of flattery to be, you know, the brunt of somebody else's joke or the butt of someone's joke. I always tell my son, you know, he's a musician, and I said, you know, when your music becomes less relevant, your pathetic comic value may be of some use. So, you know, be ready. But you might, a good friend of mine who I was in bands with, believe it or not, playing clubs in L.A., was the music director on that film. And he was so worried that I was going to be insulted, you know, and he would send me these daily scripts, you know, and he goes, you know, look, I hope this is okay, you know, and it would just crack me up. And I think some of that stuff was actually even funnier, although more brutal than what they used. And if they had let Paul Rudd just go, if someone said earlier, it might have been X-rated, you know, but it would have been worth it.
Well, it's funny because at one point he goes, I love Michael McDowell just as much as the next guy or something along those lines. So it's like, you know, he didn't want to, like, you know, bash you too bad. But hey, I got to tell you one last thing here for you. My friend Stephanie is here. I told a few people I was talking to you, and the girl on the air, she's like, I would just sit here in pants. So I'm like, you're not allowed in the studio right now. But Stephanie, she wanted to know what your favorite duet was.
Ah, boy. You know, they all have a certain thing, you know, for me, a memory for me. Certainly the one with Patty stands out in my mind, and we were so fortunate to have, such a big hit with that. It's a Burt Bacharach, Carol Sager song, On My Own. But, you know, I was able to do a duet in my lifetime, which I'll always cherish, with Aretha, you know, song. And, you know, just so many girls that I had the privilege and the pleasure of singing with. And each one of them has a different something about it that I remember fondly, you know. And typically it's the song, you know. The one chance I got to sing with Ray Charles in the studio was like some fantasy I might have had at some point, you know, to be standing in the middle of a giant soundstage with a 40-piece orchestra singing a song with Ray Charles was something I probably, you know, fantasized as a kid, you know, growing up, because I was always a devoted fan of Ray Charles, you know. He probably was my first real introduction to soul music. So that was a huge thrill for me, you know. And, you know, just so many great records. You know, we talked about the Motown Museum. That's something that everybody should do. You know, if you ever get the chance to go to Detroit, that's a must-see, I think, because it's you really get the feeling of the history behind the music that really shaped radio, you know, over those years in the 60s and in the 70s and the 80s, and continues to do so today, you know.
Yeah. Well, Michael's super honored to talk to you, and a pleasure, and good luck with the tour next year, the 50th anniversary of the Doobie Brothers, and also good luck with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm pulling for you guys.
Thanks, Meltdown. Appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you guys when we get there.
All right, Michael. Thank you.
Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
All right, there you have it, a double banger, Gary Hoey and a yacht rock legend, Michael McDonald, today in the Talking Rock and Meltdown podcast. Al Beck is over there to my left, getting ready for the rock news, and we got a special guest, Don Jamieson, on the phone. You're a big yacht rock fan, aren't you?
More of a fan of double bangers, actually.
All right, there you go. Well, you're almost on a yacht right now, aren't you?
I am. I'm on a ferry, and please don't ask me his name, because I know that old joke. And
We would never.
Using my jokes against me, I see. So the reason we wanted to get you on the pod today, well, of course, you know, we were supposed to be doing this all the time. I even sent you a T-shirt, you know, as like kind of our handshake that we're going to be on the podcast all the time. But you seem to make some news recently with that comment from Mick Mars, who dug up from that metal show a few years back, where he said that he would, if Motley Crue ever plays again, he'd play for free, or the fans would have to pay, or something along those lines. But now it's a joke, which is, you know, you're being a comedian. It was hysterical.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't put it up there to stir up any crap. Right. I just put it up there because, look, Motley made the announcement. They made this huge deal, you know, this WWE-style publicity stunt of signing this phony contract that says they couldn't tour. And my point to Mick on the set was, hey, you know, whether it's the end or not, I'll still go see you. It doesn't matter to me, but I don't believe it's the end. And that, you know, I didn't mean it in a nasty way, but he's the one that followed it up by saying, look, if for some reason we do free tickets for the whole world, and now people are tweeting me from Japan to Brazil to Mexico to the 50 continental states, and they're wanting to know where their free tickets are, and they're tagging Mick on the tweets, and thank God he hasn't blocked me yet, so that's good.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know you texted me the other day, WWE, because I think, personally, I think it's a bunch of garbage. I think it's total crap. It's like, look, you know, you milked everybody, you know, you bilked everyone for your money, you know, for the final tour, and then, you know, not even 5 years later, 4 years later, you're coming back saying, okay, we're going to do it again. You know, it just seems like garbage to me.
How many times have we had a final tour, though?
I know. They're not the first ones, for sure. You know, so, I don't know. But, you know, the only real final tour, as you know, Don, was the one Tragically Hip did a couple years ago when Gord Downie passed away like 3 months after.
Well, yeah, so far. And, you know, whether or not, I don't know if the other guys are still active and whether, you know, because the big thing is, it's like, you know, with, when you have that brand, when you have that name, it means everything. Look at the Black Crowes. It's not the Black Crowes. Right. It's Rich and Chris Robinson. But if they go out as the Rich and Chris show, they'll sell 500 tickets. If they go out as the Black Crowes, they sell out an arena. So it's the same thing. If the Tragically Hip realizes they need a few bucks, you know, they might consider going out again. I truly believe, you know, and this might be controversial, but I truly believe both Linkin Park and Soundgarden will both continue on after some time. That's just the way it is. When you have that brand, when you have those songs, when people go Soundgarden, they know every song. Those are the songs they want to hear. And, you know, Alice in Chains did it. So, you know, why not? So it's never out of the realm of possibility. You know, we can still see Twits and Sister. You know, I partially agree with you. It is BS for the fans who saved up a lot of money to see this final tour for Motley. But on the other hand, it's like, who really ever believes it's the end? So, you know, I see both sides.
Well, that's true, what you bring up, but also the point that, you know, Linkin Park and Soundgarden never did a final tour. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and I hear what you're saying with the, with those two bands too, but like one of my friends told me one time in a band who will remain nameless. It's like, look, he was a guitar player. It's like, you can get rid of me, get rid of the drummer, the bass player, but once the singer goes, that's really like the identity to the band. And that's really kind of tougher to, you know, a tougher hill to climb. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we have seen it done with respect, though. I mean, Queen, you know, has toured with other singers. And Don just mentioned Alice in Chains continuing on.
Yeah, Alice in Chains, they never did that final tour. Then they put out new music and also, you know, they got three albums now or whatever. And it's like
STP now? With
STP. Yeah, it's kind of almost like their second phase or their third phase of some of these bands. You know, Don.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting to the point I can get to my career where they can make a hologram of me and I could just stay home.
Hey, both of us are looking forward to that point, I'll tell you that much.
No one's looking forward to that more than me on this podcast. If we need the hologram of me to take over so I can just go home.
Hey, real fast, Al was going to talk about Rage Against the Machine dates. Did you say they were fake, Al?
Yeah, so there was this leak. These dates, all of a sudden we got all the, you know, Rage Against the Machine getting back together, which is super exciting. And then we got a leak of dates that got quickly taken down. As it turns out now, the whole thing was a photoshopped hoax and we don't have those dates yet.
Yeah, Don, speaking of, bands getting the band back together. I remember talking, I did a thing with Tom Morello almost a year ago to the day, and I asked him, you know, kind of, well, we're just kind of waiting to go on stage. It was like this guitar thing. It's awesome. I don't know if you saw it in New York or wherever, you know, you may have seen that, but I said, hey, what's the deal with Rage? Why won't you guys play? Because, you know, it's typically the three guys. He goes, dude, it's one guy. It's Zach. You know, he just doesn't want to do it. But, I mean, you'd go to see that, wouldn't you?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, of course. I mean, I never lost my love for that band. And yeah, that's to me more like, you know, that's like when you know a hot chick break up and you're like, I don't even really know why we broke up. It's like yeah. It was just so weird. We just weren't together all of a sudden, you know. And then you like you find her on Facebook a few years later and you're like, she still looks good. Maybe, you know, we can get something going again.
It's only a mystery if the chick is hot, though. That's the thing. Yeah, it's the only time it's a mystery.
Well, yeah, Zach saw, you know, Tom and the other guys doing Prophets of Rage, and he's like, no, you don't belong with those guys. You belong with me. And, you know, he courted them, and they're back together. And then, I'm really excited, so.
Yeah, and then you go out with that girl a couple times, realize she's crazy, and that's why you broke up in the first place.
Right, but at least the fans get some fun out of it.
Yeah.
Also, David Lee Roth is, you know, he said on this podcast a couple months ago that Van Halen was finished, and now he's saying that he
basically is responsible for the band. He's saying that he wrote all the songs. He's talking about specifically the debut album, that he's like, I wrote all those songs, I structured them, including the guitar solos. Came up with the idea for the stripes on the guitar. It was even his idea. We should call this Van Halen.
Wow. You've seen that story, right, Don?
David Lee Roth being David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say, you know, as someone who wrote the first three Led Zeppelin albums, I fully believe them.
Yeah. Hey, congratulations by that, by the way. I must have missed that in our past conversations. But yeah, Diamond Dave, I'll tell you what. Did you get a chance to listen to the interview I had with him?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. You ask a question, he says something else.
Right. It's like herding cats. There's no question. Yeah, but yeah. I'm one of these guys, like, I love Dave. I love, like, Nugent. I love Gene Simmons. I love all those guys because they're arrogant as all get out, but they're rock stars, man. And I love Diamond Dave.
Absolutely. And that's, we kind of miss that, in this day and age. These true rock stars, guys who still have a mystique about them. And Dave's amazing. I mean, you listen to his podcast, and he'll talk about how to make the perfect cheese sandwich for 10 minutes, and you can't stop listening.
Yeah, well, his radio show didn't work that well, did it?
It might not be for the masses, but I always get a kick out of him. Anything he says, I just start laughing, even if I have no idea what he's saying.
Hey, we got one more. Do you got time for one more quick story?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so the final one we got is with Dave Grohl, and go ahead.
Yeah, remember there was that festival, I think it was earlier this year, there was that the guy in the wheelchair who went crowd surfing in his wheelchair, and of course Dave Grohl, being Dave Grohl, sees it, praises the guy, and invites him up on stage. Well, that music festival actually turned that into a little mini documentary and posted up on YouTube. It's like a 30-minute little video about this dude in his wheelchair and his crowd surfing. Well, it just so happens that Dave Grohl, just on his normal YouTube treks, happened to come across this thing, went and shared it online. But I think that's kind of cool, giving this guy some attention.
Yeah, Dave does that kind of stuff. Have you seen the Foo Fighters live, Don?
Oh, yeah. I saw him a couple of years ago at the Forum in L.A. And, it's a big show. He's always inviting people up on stage. A lot of bands, the stage is on lockdown. You can't even get near it. But, he's got half the crowd up there by the end of the show.
Yeah, that's right.
He always makes a great choice, though. It always seems like every show he brings somebody on stage, and it's always a great choice, like a kid or, like, the guy in the wheelchair crowd surfing. It's always something cool.
Yeah, I think here in Detroit, some guy held up a sign, said, "It's my birthday, I want to have a beer," or some crap like that, and he brought him up on stage. So, hey, Don, have you gotten any killer vinyl records lately?
Well, I haven't gotten any, like, real gems, but when I was just out in Las Vegas this past weekend, I found out Metal Blade Records.
I saw that on your Instagram. That was killer.
Yeah, has a booth in the Antique Mall of America out there.
Wow.
And they got a ton of stuff. They have new releases, old stuff, rare stuff, out of print. They have test pressings of some of the classic Metal Blade albums that are for sale. So lots of cool collectibles in there. And I bought a few records, but like I said, no gems, but that place is just a little gem all the way down the other end of the strip. So if people dig what Metal Blade has done over the years, they should go down there and check it out. It's a really cool booth.
I'm definitely going to have to go there next time we're in Vegas, so we go every year. Hey, real fast, I got this guy here at work was unloading a bunch of records, and he had a whole list of what they were getting rid of, so I checked off a bunch of stuff. And two of the records I got were two Frank Zappa records, and I couldn't believe how much I liked them. I'm thinking this is going to be kind of weird or bizarre, but some of that stuff is really good. Do you like Frank?
Yeah, I got... as soon as I got back into collecting vinyl, I immediately went out and got Shake Your Booty on vinyl, which is my favorite Zappa album. Between just all the guitar solos on there, there's live stuff, tons of funny songs on there. It's pretty much everything Frank all rolled up into one. So if you don't have that one, I would definitely suggest that one.
And then we were texting back and forth a couple weeks ago. I saw King Diamond for the first time, and it's like my thoughts on King Diamond was I love this show. I thought it was great. I thought it was kind of like a poor man's Alice Cooper without the hits, but the band was great, and I thought the theatrics were really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like it's such a big stage show. It's kind of like the only Broadway that I could understand. As long as there's something satanic about it, I can kind of get a grasp about what's going on. And his voice sounded better than ever. So, yeah, kick ass. And we love the king. Long live.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I was really happy that I went because I was kind of on the fence of going. So, hey, Don, listen, we'll cut you loose here. Thanks for taking the time out with us. And have a great Thanksgiving and Christmas and all that stuff. We'll probably talk to you before then, but we do appreciate the time.
Yeah, best of both you guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Don.
All right, Don, take care, man.
Bye.
All right, there you have it. Don Jameson joining us here from That Metal Show. So, Al, give me your socials and we'll cut out.
First of all, can we get him on every week? It really lightens my load a lot. But you can find me at Al Beck Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, there you go. And the real Don Jameson, by the way, I believe is what his Twitter handle is. Love following Don on Twitter and Instagram and whatnot. At Meltdown WRIF. Hey, listen, if you like this podcast, you made it this far, 5-star ratings, write reviews, share with your friends as well. But we do appreciate you guys listening, and we'll do it all over again next time. Got some interviews already locked and loaded for next week, so looking forward to that. Hey, have a great Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you guys again real soon here on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.